Now, each month we welcome our team of legal eagles. Gary Ryecroft, partner at Joseph A. Jones in Lancaster. Rachel Horman, solicitor and director, head of domestic violence and forced marriage at Watson Ramsbottom Limited, Blackburn, into the studios to discuss issues affecting us where the law is concerned, and also to highlight some of the issues which can be brought to public attention through high-profile cases and new legislation. We're going to highlight Clare's Law and prenuptial agreements today. First off, Rachel, an update on Clare's Law. I think we first highlighted this in December last year. Just remind us of the background to Clare's Law.
Yes, Clare's Law was brought about, unfortunately, after another domestic violence tragedy, as often is the case. Clare Wood was a young mother from Salford, and she was murdered by her boyfriend in 2009. He strangled her to death and set her body on fire, so it was a very gruesome, horrible domestic violence murder. Her parents then campaigned after that for this law, because her ex-partner, Georgia Appleton, had a history of domestic violence against women, and they felt that had Clare's Law been in place at the time, it could have saved her from the murder. So that's how it came about, really. It's been trialled for 12 months in four different counties, including Manchester, and that was hailed to be a success. And as a result of that, it came into force on the 8th of March this year, which was International Women's Day.
So what does this law mean, then?
Clare's Law, otherwise known as the Domestic Violence Disclosure Scheme, which is a bit more of a mouthful, it basically enables people to request information from the police about their new partner, or possibly from third parties. So it could be the parents that ask the police for information about their child's new partner, so that they can be informed if that person has a history of domestic violence against other partners.
So how can the information be obtained? Where do you go to get the info then?
Well, you would initially contact your local police station or ring 101, which will put you through to the local police station. And you have to give the information about why you believe there may be an issue, what your concerns are. And then that is taken away to a committee who will decide whether or not to make a disclosure. So it isn't an automatic right for information. If the committee decide that there is a need to give that information, then a disclosure will be given, usually to the person in the relationship, and in certain cases to a third party, such as the person's parents.
What's the process after that? Then, I mean, some people might be worried that by requesting the information, they're accusing someone.
Yeah, it's not about accusing anybody. It's just about effectively trying to save lives. And because somebody, most domestic violence perpetrators do tend to have a history of it. Two women a week in this country are murdered by their partners or ex-partners. So it is a serious issue, and this is to try and reduce that, so that if that information is given, it might enable them to walk away sooner. To be honest, I think at the point that people are asking for this information, they've already got concerns.
Is it too late sometimes?
It's possibly too late. The police can give out the information without the request.
Rachel, but hopefully it would tip people in the right direction.
Absolutely. It's another tool to help us tackle it. Yeah. And if you've got the information, then you can make a better decision. My concern with it is that it lulls people into a false sense of security, in that if you make an application for this information and the police come back and say, actually, we've got nothing on this guy, there's no problem.
Gives them a clean bill of health that they may not have.
Exactly. It doesn't mean to say that that person hasn't perpetrated domestic abuse. It just means to say that it hasn't come to the attention of the police.
Yeah.
And when you look at the statistics that a woman is assaulted on average 35 times before she reports it to the police, then the vast majority of domestic violence isn't ever reported. So I think what I would say is, if anybody does have concerns about their new partner's behaviour, go and speak to the police anyway. Go and speak to the domestic violence charities in your area, and, you know, make a decision whether or not, you know, whether the information is disclosed or not, to perhaps get out, because if it is concerning you, there's probably a reason for that.
We'll come back, we'll chat some more between now and three this afternoon. Headlines on the way. Have Ryecroft and Rachel Horman this afternoon. We're talking all things legal. We've been talking about Clare's Law. Strangely enough, some news just in, Rachel. Amy Jackson, a girl from Liverpool who became a Bollywood star, we mentioned her a couple of times on the programme, is an alleged victim of domestic violence. The alleged assailant is a professional boxer from Liverpool, Joseph Selkirk. He's in court. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, Amy may give evidence for him or may not even turn up. What's the situation in a case like this? The Crown Prosecution Service is pressing charges, even though Amy's refused to give evidence.
This is something that the police and the CPS are encouraged to do, known as a victimless prosecution, because in many domestic violence cases, so much emphasis is placed on the victim's statement that can often lead to trials collapsing when the perpetrator maybe intimidates the victim into dropping that statement and not proceeding. So the police are encouraged to look at other evidence, as you would do in something like a murder where there wouldn't be any victim's statement. So in this particular case, I understand that there are other witnesses and CCTV evidence that can be used to prove the attack, possibly. What I would hope that would happen in this case and other cases is that even though the victim might be reluctant to give a statement, and the victim could actually be witness summoned so that they have to attend court, but effectively what I would hope would happen is that the perpetrator, the defendant in the case, sees the overwhelming amount of other evidence there is and is encouraged then to plead guilty and therefore avoid the victim even having to come to court and give evidence.
Have you come across anything like this before?
It's unusual that you would get a case where it's successful without any evidence from the victim, but there have been several cases like this where there's been other areas of evidence that have been gathered. And like I say, at the end of the day, the perpetrator will often change his plea and plead guilty when he sees how much evidence there is against them.
And as I say, that case going on in Liverpool today. We'll have more on that story with Gary Hickson. He'll be